It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
It's exciting to be joining you on our third season of the Live Greatly podcast. In case you're new to the show, I'm Crystal Bauer, a wellness expert on a mission to help you thrive personally and professionally. If you're ready to thrive, I invite you to subscribe and follow season three, because each week I'm sharing conversations with incredible individuals about life, wellness, and success. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast.
We tend to think that stress, these states of, you know, dopamine-rich contraction and exertion are what we're going for. But there also exists a more profound and expansive kind of well-being that's more linked to silence.
The world is noisier today than it ever has been before, and we're left with trying to process this information overload. I'm so excited to chat about the power of silence today with Lee Martz and Justin Talbot Zorn. They are the authors of their new book, Golden, The Power of Silence in a World of Noise. The same techniques that Justin and Lee have taught to U.S. Congress, NASA, Harvard, and Google can help you reclaim the presence of silence in your life. We're going to be talking about why silence is important, how you can find silence in the busyness of life, how to navigate information overload, how to find silence in social settings, and so much more. I'm so incredibly excited to share this episode with you. Let's jump into it and welcome Justin and Lee to the show. Lee and Justin, thank you so much for taking some time with me today. I'm really, really excited to have you guys here.
Oh, thanks for having us, Crystal.
Thanks, Crystal.
My pleasure. So when I heard about your book, I thought to myself, okay, I need to have them on the show because this is perfect for what I'm all about. And I'm really, really excited to talk with you both about it. So to start though, I would love to hear a little bit of the backstory. How'd you guys meet? What were you doing before you wrote this book? And then we can go into all about the book and, you know, the importance of finding silence. So maybe we start with, well, you tell me, who wants to go first, Justin or Lee?
Oh, Justin? I'll go first this time.
All right.
You know, we were both working in intense kind of modes of living. I was on Capitol Hill in DC. My wife was also working in politics. Lee's been working for many years with chemists and corporations on getting toxic chemicals out of supply chains. Wow. I was working for many years on climate policy, economic policy, in the intensity, in the belly of the beast. And we just both had this feeling like things are not working. The things we care about, we're not making the progress we want to see. You know, it's often two steps forward, one step backward at best. And what was missing? You know, what was the key to being able to generate more progress, generate more understanding among people, generate more good ideas and connection to intuition? And this answer that came to both of us independently was to cultivate more silence. Not just silence in the sense of not speaking out about what we believe in, or silence in the sense of not expressing ourselves, but silence in the sense of this golden contemplative space where we can be in a place where nothing's making claims on our consciousness, where there's nothing interfering with our true perception and intention, so we can be present and tune into deeper answers.
A close friend had introduced us, and so we were, you know, tossing some of these ideas around, and we decided to write a article for Harvard Business Review on silence. And in fact, we pitched a bunch of ideas, and silence was kind of the wild card idea. Yeah. And they said, do that. Thanks. That was all their instruction. So we went to it, writing this article, and it ended up resonating with people. It ended up being shared widely and going viral, which was completely unexpected.
Yeah.
But obviously it signaled to us that there was something to explore here, and something to explore in particular with this type of audience, a business audience doing work in the world, you know, engaged fully in that time of their lives, but also yearning for silence. So we set out on interviews with neuroscientists and poets and executives and a man incarcerated on death row and a Grammy winning opera singer and all sorts of amazing people, asking them this question: what's the deepest silence you've ever known?
So that's a big question. Now, I want to go into that. But first, I'm thinking to myself, is this a bigger problem now than you think in the past, as far as busyness, noise, And why is this a problem? Like, why is that noise and that constant oddness? Why is that an issue?
Totally. We think of noise in a really specific way. You know, we think of it as unwanted interference, unwanted distraction. And that could be the noise in our ears, the literal noise of the sounds of the world, which are on the rise. Mm-hmm. It could be the noise on our screens, the informational noise, which is arguably exponentially on the rise. And we get into the research around that in a deep way. But there's also the noise in our heads, the internal noise. And that's also on the rise, although it's tough to measure. Ethan Cross, a professor of psychology at the University of Michigan, estimates that we listen to something like 320 State of the Union addresses worth of internal chatter every single day. Jeez. And so it's tough to find the right proxy indicators for how to measure a person's internal chatter. But what we've explored through all these interviews with neuroscientists and academic psychologists, as well as executives and poets and people facing extraordinary challenges in their lives and overcoming them, what we've seen is that there's this interplay between the different levels of noise, the auditory noise, the informational noise, and the internal noise. And it's all on the rise in the world today. And a key pathway forward that we've found is simply appreciating silence. To your question, Crystal, about, you know, really, why is it on the rise? Why does it matter? You know, in our culture today, we tend to mistake stress for aliveness. We tend to think that stress, these states of, you know, dopamine-rich contraction and exertion are what we're going for. But there also exists a more profound and expansive kind of well-being that's more linked to silence. And this is what we explore in the book.
I love that. And I, knowing that I was going to be chatting with you guys today, I went for a nice like jog and walk in a beautiful area, like secluded in nature this morning. And I was pondering a little bit about this idea of silence. And I know for me personally, it's something that I crave. I love being social. I love being around friends. I love doing shows and sharing things and speaking and all of that. But I also love having that quietness. Now, for me, it's being in nature and just taking my mind off of the stress of what's going on and just being in the present moment. My mind calms down. And I then find I actually do have better ideas. I feel more creative. I have more energy, and it trickles into all areas of my life. And when I don't have that, sometimes like you forget how important it is because you're just like caught up in the hustle and the bustle. So I love that, you know, you're talking about this. And I think for some people, if they don't have this in their lives yet, they may not know what they're missing. So like how can we inspire people? How are you inspiring people to make this a priority and to find this silence in their lives? And then we'll go into, well, how do they find it? What do they need to do?
Well, first off, you just nailed it, Crystal, with just like your understanding. And because we are talking about a silence that is found, or the quiet, that whatever it brings you quiet. So you're finding it in a run, out in nature, walking, you know, those kinds of things that we're not talking about necessarily meditation per se. And it's just important to point that out, that a lot of our default, we might even collapse the meaning of silence and meditation, but this is really a non-meditator's guide to getting beyond the noise. And one of our, simply because meditation isn't for everybody, and sometimes it's not really our way to quiet at all, even when it has been our way, like for Justin and I, we both have had deep practices in the past and we respect it so much and it can be wonderful, but there's certain phases in life, perhaps, and times where that's not the most practical way to silence. Sure. So it's a combination of meeting people with the fact that most people do really resonate with the fact that it is much louder. Like, it's not just that, you know, we've always complained about noise as humanity, but things are exponentially louder. That you're right, that there may be a difference, a real distance from the benefits of silence that they remember. They may kind of rest in the concept of silence and, or, you know, sort of think of it as something far out there. But if we can invite them in, even to the tiniest moments of experiencing silence, which could be as simple as taking an in-breath and an out-breath, noticing how that can regulate your nervous system a bit, maybe clear the mind and focus to just pad a little bit more time between thing one and thing two that we do in a day, and notice the quality of our quality of attention or quality of our relationships and tasks. So finding those little moments of silence can help create a little bit of a crack in the doorway so that we can see, there's much more available, which is what we do in the book, is look at those tiny moments of silence and then the bigger, broader, more rapturous moments of silence when maybe you really notice, like with the chemists I work with, we go out into the redwoods and we're thinking about these complex issues of removing pollutants from our products. What's the breakthrough idea that is needed to shift this dynamic? And it takes deep silence. It takes, getting out into the woods, connecting to nature for these folks to connect with why that's important and then for the ideas to come. So that's a big payoff. We can get insight. We can get, great ideas. We can heal and we can just really reorient to what's most important to us.
I totally agree with that. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on why that is. I know for me, I get, if I'm paying attention a lot to the news or media or listening to everyone else's opinions, it takes me having that silence to kind of come back to how I feel and what resonates with me. And I think that's going to be unique for each individual. But I guess, why do you think that we need that silence to be able to have those creative ideas or to be able to come back to maybe our own personal truth?
Such an important question. Now, that really gets the essence of why we wrote this book, how to really encounter truth, how to really encounter the good ideas that are going to help bring us forward out of the challenges we face as individuals, as families, as communities, as whole societies. We wrote this article that Lee mentioned for Harvard Business Review some years back. And we wrote about this, as Lee mentioned, as something different from mindfulness, as the idea really, in essence, to get to take a break from one of life's most basic responsibilities. And that's the responsibility of having to think of what to say. And we find often that in this world, it's like a point and counterpoint culture. It's like we're constantly in this essentially fight or flight state of being, where we're often thinking, so often thinking about how we can say the right thing, how we can be entertaining, how we can be right, how we can advance our career, how we can perform for other people in the right way.
Yeah.
And for us, this keeps us out of the state where we can be receptive to the signals of what's true. And the work right now, so much of the work right now is distinguishing the signal from the noise and getting out of that kind of fight or flight state of being in that kind of stance of performing is a prerequisite for doing that. We talked, Crystal, with a guy who was the son of Iranian immigrants, went blind when he was 8 years old, learned Braille, became a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, and became the lieutenant governor of Washington State when he was in his 30s, Cyrus Habib. And when everyone thought Cyrus was going to run for governor or U.S. Senate, he decided to drop out of politics and take a vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience as a novice Jesuit priest. And everyone was like, "What are you doing, man? This is crazy." And he told us that he didn't so much leave politics and make this crazy career move, seemingly crazy career move, because it was too noisy, just in politics, or too noisy in terms of all the stress in his life and this and that. He said it was too noisy inside himself. It was too much noise of all sorts of distracting thoughts in his own consciousness, and he couldn't discern what was truly in his heart. So he just kept feeling like, after putting in all this work, he was doing the wrong thing. And when he got to that, beginning of his study to become a member of this austere religious order, he realized there was no more noise in his life. All that, all that was simplified, but it was still so noisy in his head, until he realized one day that there was a point source of all that noise in his consciousness. And it was, as he told us, that he was performing for other people, performing to other people's expectations. And that was crowding out his ability to hear what was really important for his life's mission. So in this book, you know, as Lee alluded to in saying this isn't just a book about how to go meditate or go to a monastery or whatever it might be, it's like, for us, this is a book about how to be in the world. We don't have to be like you, like Cyrus, and run off to a monastery. How can we be in the world as good parents and spouses and co-workers and people leading projects and people serving other people, to be in this space where we can receive intuition, where we could discern the noise from the signal?
That's unbelievable. And I think that is the question, right? Because I do think it's easier when you're on vacation, or if we were just in Glacier National Park and so there was no Wi-Fi. So phone, like, you don't need your phone because nothing's going to be going through. So we're out in nature, we're hiking, and no phones. And I think it's easier to connect to that silence and to have things calm down. Now, that said, my mind still was really active because there were grizzlies and there's different things. So you're like, oh, what's that? Is it, you know, are we good? So there's still going to be, even in those environments, you know, stuff going on. But I think when you're able to get away, it's easier. But the majority of our lives, we're going to be, for most of us, dealing with this life that we're in, right? Where there is all this information and we are interacting on a regular basis. So I would love it if you could share, how can people tap into this on a regular basis, on a daily basis, if they are at work, you know, overachievers, or, you know, parenting and dealing with your kids or social settings, like what do you think really works, and how much time do you think people actually need to tap into this and have it help them?
Yeah, we take on the whole second part of the book is really the field guide to finding silence. So we look at what's within our sphere of control first off, and that's usually has a little more to do with our world, our individual actions versus going out with family or friends or coworkers. So we start with that sphere of control where we have the most control or where we have most influence, and think about the little things we could interject throughout a day. So we have 33 ways to find silence in the book. These are meant not to be prescriptive, but to kind of get those juices flowing, those creative juices flowing. Because there's a few things to get over. Like, for example, like, you know, it doesn't need to look a certain way. It doesn't need to look like what the person that with the desk beside you does. You know, it could be, it's your way, you know. So what's your way? Which way will you actually do? Which way will bring you joy? Things like that. And even if it's a little, I know, odd, we'll say. So we talked to a bunch of people, a wild and fun cast of characters who have ideas. They point us towards things to, like, for example, just simply stopping at some point of the day and listening to the silence, noticing how things shift and change as we tune into the silence just for a moment. And that comes from really a friend of ours in a high pressure job as a correspondent. And she just at the end of the day would sit on the couch, tune in and listen to silence for a few minutes till it shift that wall of noise from where she had just come from. And then she'd get up and cook her dinner for the night. That was her practice, which actually links to a really ancient Indian practice called Nada Yoga, and practice in India, tuning into the sound of silence. So we spoke with another person who oriented us to just the little gifts of silence one finds throughout the day. Little gifts, they may be that not gifts you ordered. For example, you're in a long line, your phone is broken, or this or that, and you just embrace that moment without more stimulus and input, instead of filling it, instead of reaching for your phone. So that, you know, oh, the stereo's broken. What is it like to just be in this car in silence and take that in? So there's really infinite ways. One more I'll throw out there is a great friend who also just interjects little moments of silence throughout the day, whether it's between meetings or when he's moving from one room to another, or when he's opening a document, just takes a deep breath. Just thinks of transitions as moments to pause and let in a little bit of silence to regroup. My love favorite that. Way. Yeah. It's just to get outside for just a second and watch the bees. Mm-hmm. Just a second.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Now, what about for people who get uncomfortable with silence? You know, maybe they're in the habit of always being busy or doing things, and especially with our phones, which are most of us on us all the time. I think that that's a habit that, you know, you walk
down a hall or street and you see everybody's like clicking at their phone, looking down. I mean, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people. So what do you think could potentially help with that? Like, how can we start to distance ourselves a little bit to tap into that silence when we do have that pull of our phone? And then for those people who are uncomfortable with having that silence in their lives.
Totally. And Crystal, you're describing, when you talk about those people, you're talking about the vast majority of humanity.
I know. And like, no judgment. Like, that's me some of the time too.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah. For us, having written this book, that's us a lot. And, you know, there was a study at the University of Virginia in 2014 where a social psychologist put undergraduate students in a room alone with no phones and no distraction, no one to talk to for 15 minutes. And they had the option to either sit in silence with no entertainment, or they could administer to themselves a very painful electric shock. Ooh. And at the beginning, everyone in the study said that they would actually pay money to avoid the painful electric shock. But after 15 minutes in silence, more than 60% of the men in the study and 25% of the women in the study administered the painful electric shock rather than sitting in silence.
What?
Like,
does it make any sense to me?
It really gets to the essence of that silence is scary. Silence is awkward. Silence is really uncomfortable. And this goes back, this idea is not like a, you know, Gen Z digital native kind of problem. You know, Nietzsche hundreds of years ago talked about the horror vacui, the horror of the vacuum. And Goethe and all these philosophers talked about why silence is scary. So this is something we look at. And it comes back to your question before about creative solutions. We look at 2,500 years ago, the Greek philosopher and mathematician Pythagoras, who a lot of people remember from middle school math class, who was just like this extraordinarily genius person. He required everyone in his inner circle of students to not speak for 5 years as a precondition to joining him as a student, because of how that shifts the architecture of the mind. Mm. So to answer your question about how we overcome what you're talking about, silence being scary, silence being awkward, being uncomfortable, for us, the first step is recognizing that the silence is good for us. Recognizing that there's something nourishing, recognizing that there can be an abundance, a counterpoint to stress in the silence, and it's always available.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's like the perception of it. Just if we can shift our perception of the silence from, okay, this is uncomfortable, to this is good for me, then that changes the way, at least for me, that I feel about it. Mm-hmm. So I love that. You know, I'm thinking back to a really uncomfortable thing that we did during my integrative medicine fellowship. So I did Dr. Andrew Weil's fellowship, and we had a residential week. So they had us, for one of the workshops, sit across from someone in our class. We had to stare them in the eye, eye contact, silence for however long, I can't remember, but it felt like forever. And it was so awkward. Not only are you silent, but you're staring someone that you don't know very well in the eye for that period of time. But what I can say is it took the pressure off after that. You're like, oh, okay, made it through. Like it lessened the awkwardness of silence in a bit for me after that.
Yeah, I mentioned how we do this as individuals, and it is great to bring in some experimentation and some play, even, which it sounds like that was it, you know, to loosen things up a bit with our coworkers and our family members, and to bring in a little more diverse experiences of being together that it may not always need to be verbalizing and talking and, you know, stimulus or watching things and all those things, that we could actually share silence. There's so many people who are yearning for that. And it does make space for some of the quieter voices, even like our young children or introverts in our lives, and or even the marginalized thinking that we have, to come forward if we're not always in that sort of default reactive way of bantering, complaining, you know, entertaining, all those things with one another. We have something new can emerge.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm curious what you would suggest for an elevator. I think everyone can relate to sometimes that awkwardness, right? You're in the elevator with people you don't know, you're all close, and then it's just quiet. So what any thoughts on like a little trick or something people can do in that situation?
I love that, that observation. I mean, that in a sense could be a little bit of a little gift of silence. Like really it's a place where maybe there's, you know, there doesn't need to be anything to say and we can be okay about that. We could actually just kind of enjoy that quiet ride in the presence of other people. It's one of those times where we can be quiet together, you know, and explore that versus awkwardly breaking, you know, but it's also nice to relate. So I think it's, you know, that's, this is never about really like the one way. It's really noticing the impact. There's an impact to our world being filled with noise and stimulus. There is an impact there. And there's an impact when we shift to some silence, some other things, you know, and we want a diverse range of ways to be together.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we are coming close to the end. I could keep talking with you both for a really long time. This is so fascinating. But before, you know, we get into a wellness lightning round, I'm going to ask you a couple of fun questions. I would love to hear any last thoughts, anything that you would like to share before we kind of move into that part of the show.
You know, one thing that's always important to share is that the kind of silence we're talking about isn't the silence of apathy or withdrawal. You know, or sometimes you hear silence as complacency or even silence as violence. And we honor that, that there is a kind of not speaking that is censorship, and that that can be really problematic and a source of a lot of issues in the world. But what we're talking about is the silence that we seek, the silence that enables us to renew our energy and find more clarity and find more discernment so that we can be more skillful in addressing the things that we care about.
I love that. And Lee, anything that you would like to share before we transition to the wellness lightning round?
I just like to remind listeners that this is something you know how to do. Like, you know your way to quiet. We as humans know our way to quiet. We've needed quiet all along. And there's a real benefit to being able to tune in with oneself, what one, you know, cares about, our intentions, how we spend our time, and where we put our attention. It matters so much. And there's a great cost to not getting to do that, to being filled with noise and surrounded by noise. And there's a great benefit to actually taking the time to do it.
Love it. Well, I'm going to be putting a link to your book, Golden, in the episode details, and any social media links that I have will go in there as well. So thank you, Justin and Lee. This has been amazing. I'm going to give you a couple last questions. So let me know if you're ready.
Ready.
Okay. Yeah. So
ready we'll start, as we're going to be.
All right.
Yeah. This is Justin. As ready as we get.
We'll start with Justin and then we'll go over to Lee. So Justin, I would love to know, what is a self-care practice that is kind of a non-negotiable for you? Something that you do on a regular basis?
I have 2-year-old twins and a 5-year-old at home. So the sonic environment, it's kind of ironic having written this book because it's pretty loud at my house. So one thing is just stepping outside without a phone and just walking around the block and feeling the light of the sun. We mentioned listening to the silence, listening to the breeze, whatever it might be, but connecting to the light of the sun and letting go of the phone.
Love it. Love it. Lee, and same question for you. What's a self-care practice that is a non-negotiable for you?
Yeah, my way to quiet, my self-care practice is dance. So I teach dance and I take dance all the time. And so that is the space where my mind gets quiet, especially when I'm trying to communicate with students and convey some choreography on the spot, right? So that requires a lot of focus, and that amount of focus does not allow for me to be thinking about all the things or worrying or planning and all those things. So that's my non-negotiable. We do everything we do with this book, even around me dancing and Justin taking his walks around the block.
Yeah, I love it. And you know what's interesting, and this is the same for me, is both of yours involve movement. And for me as well, movement, if it's walking or running or playing sports, whatever it is, that is my silence as well. And I tapped into, I still meditate a bit, but I'm finding it's harder for me to find that same level of silence if I'm just sitting and not moving. So
right.
I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Us too. No, it's an important distinction that silence doesn't mean stillness necessarily or being still. It doesn't mean being alone either necessarily. You can be with others. Yeah.
Yeah. So cool. Okay. Last question I have for you. Why don't we start with you, Lee, this time, and then Justin, you can finish it. So knowing what you know today, what advice would you have given to yourself from 10 years ago?
Oh my goodness. So much is kind of occurring to me, but kind of connected to what we were saying. I would want my 10-year-ago self to understand how important it is to listen to the intelligence coming from my body, the signals and intelligence coming from my body, and to value it as much as the other forms of intelligence that I'm surrounded by and that we access all the time, that really the body's got a lot of wisdom to share. Follow her lead in my case. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. And then Justin, how about for you?
Yeah, really related to what Lee said. I think the main thing would be that intuition is real. You know, not everything that matters in our world is about, you know, what we would call empirical data, big data in the world right now, and what we can, you know, publish on the internet. That there's real truth within ourselves that we can connect to, you know, which links to one of the questions you asked about again, Crystal.
Yeah, I love it. Well, Justin and Lee, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for taking time with me today, sharing all of these insights. And I'm just really excited to help share Golden with the world. Such a wonderful cause. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I absolutely loved sharing these insights with you. If you have a moment, I would greatly appreciate you leaving a review about what you loved about this episode. Leaving reviews helps this show gain visibility so those who can benefit from it can gain access to it. Thank you so much for your support. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Now for a disclaimer, the contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only. Always seek the guidance of your physician or qualified health professional for any recommendations specific to you or for any questions regarding your specific health, your sleep patterns, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions. Always consult your physician before taking any medications, any over-the-counter drugs, any supplements, vitamins, or herbs, and consult your physician before starting any new lifestyle programs. All information, views, and statements shared on the Live Greatly podcast are purely the opinions of the authors. They are not medical advice or treatment recommendations. They have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Opinions of guests are their own, and Crystal Bauer and this podcast do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. Neither Crystal Bauer nor this podcast takes any responsibility for possible health consequences of a person or persons following the information in this educational content. Always consult your physician for recommendations specific to you. If any product mentioned in this podcast has been received from the manufacturer or public relations team for that product with the express intent of editorial consideration, the product will be identified as such. A product for which Live Greatly receives some form of compensation for promoting will be identified as such.